Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're going to have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, and especially a subject that I've covered numerous different ways, but tonight's going to be unique, and that is living in the astral and mental worlds. And really, what is the concept behind it? Why do we have life there? And what is involved in the changes that take place in a person who is alive, living there? And I'm not just talking about someone who might have an occasional visit through an out-of-body experience. I'm talking about someone who's actually living there, meaning that their consciousness is focused on the senses within that particular body. And I think that's a good way to start in defining what it means to be alive somewhere, is that where our consciousness is focused in terms of our sense. Focused means that the primary emphasis of gaining information from the world around us is the sense that we're using attached or connected to the body that is in that realm. So here in the physical world, while we're physically alive, we are most conscious in our physical senses. That doesn't mean we don't get a little bit of information from our astral senses, which are in our astral body, and from our mental senses, which is, you know, they're in our mental body. But those senses are very subtle, and especially the mental, almost non-existent. Most people don't even know what they are. And when we talk about astral senses, we talk about our feelings, but we get very little sense from them in comparison to our physical senses, which all the time are giving us a great deal of sense, unless we're in a very special kind of environment in which the physical world is being deliberately sheltered from our senses. There are such environments, but they're rare. Now, this is the reason that we are continually saying, some people use the word earthbound. Of course, all this is taking place on Earth in different dimensional aspects, but I think they mean it the way I'm saying it, which is we're physically earthbound. And that's because there is so much strong, very strong information coming through, amounts of information coming through our senses that keeps us aware of here, but at the cost of being less aware of the astral and mental worlds. That's part of the human condition, by the way. It is not necessary for a being to only experience life that way. In theory, if the senses were unified and able to receive information in equal amounts at the same time, it would be fine to be able to sense in all three realms at the same time in the same amount of intensity with no barrier between the bodies. There's a thing called, we'll call it the energy matrix or energy field of barrier between the bodies, caused by actually one sense being exaggerated over another, and which usually is a result of selfishness, and that blocks the, we'll say, easy transfer of information from one body to the next. So we can focus in on how we feel, I'll use this as an example, but not while we're having, say, a huge amount of input from our physical senses. So let's be practical and talk about it in a very specific way. Let's say that you're in some kind of painful experience, physically painful. Maybe you fell down some stairs or you slammed your thumb in the door or something. And during that particular moment, the overwhelming pain of that particular experience, which is physical pain, would actually prevent most people from experiencing their feelings and their thoughts about the circumstance and the thoughts of others as well, because they would be overwhelmed by the feeling coming from their physical body, not from their astral. When I talk about feelings, I'm talking about emotional feelings, you know, what people would call emotional feelings. So we have a different sensation than if we could share all this at the same time. You could recognize all of those quote-unquote sensations coming through, and if you could do so at the same level, then you would be no longer encumbered by the loss of awareness that most human beings have on a regular basis. Now, that state is called superhuman. It's sometimes referred to as a member of the next kingdom or a soul-like being, because that's what they can do. They can sense in an equal way through all the bodies. So they feel physically, they feel emotionally, feel mentally. That kind of sounds a little strange, but they sense through all those senses at the same time and in equal amounts with no barriers between the bodies. So when there's no barriers, then they can be not only sensorially aware, but they also can think and create through all three of the bodies at the same time, making them really super, super great at being conscious, meaning the ability to take all the knowledge that's coming in from all this information from the senses and being able to integrate it into a whole with all this, we'll say, extraneous in some circumstances information, and coming to much greater understandings about the same sense information. And then also the sense information is usually much more accurate besides. So it's a big deal to be able to do this. Now, humans generally don't, and generally are not able to. And the odd part about it is that because they separate time from space by being so selfish, the effects of any experience is like blurred all over the place, as much as by sometimes minutes, hours, even days, weeks, or months before, or longer for some people, before the information from these bodies is well integrated with some level of consciousness or understanding about what it all means together. And that's a big deal. I mean, it's such a big deal that some people spend a lot of time trying to lessen that time, which is kind of a odd thing to say. So in other words, they practice trying to reduce the level of time between being able to bring together these things so that their understanding is more immediate and much greater. So the separation of time from space caused by selfishness leads to these odd occurrences. Now, even if there wasn't selfishness, just the effect of energy being so intensely gravitational causes the effect in a, we'll call it, say, physics sort of way. So even if you weren't dealing with the element of consciousness, you could get the same kind of effect from things that weren't even thinking, or at least not at the level of human being things, because of the alteration of time and space by having large amounts of dense energy, which we sometimes refer to as matter in the physical world, that produces some of this effect even if you're not particularly selfish. Wow. So for animals and lesser, we'll say, conscious beings, not obviously who are human anymore, those lesser beings have this as a natural state. They actually can't bring together all of this information, and sometimes they don't even have much mental sense. So it makes it very difficult, and because of that, they don't have the ability to use the two highest senses on a conscious level that humans do, which is the sense of understanding the Creator, God, and the sense of being able to co-create or create more with the Creator through creating light or virtue and form. And so those two things are missing for them. they may actually experience the feeling of love and the feeling of even the feeling of being, we'll say, secure and being able to have some joy and happiness. They can experience those things to some extent, but they can't experience love for God, and they can't experience an understanding of God. They don't understand, nor can they co-create virtue with and for and as a part of God. And so that is all missing because of the nature of the physics that surrounds their beingness, while especially physically alive. Now, the interesting thing about this is that humans get more than one shot at this whole system. Yes, they're physically alive for a relatively short time, by the way. And during that time, their emphasis is on the physical world, the physical senses, with that dominating their awareness and their consciousness. And then they shed that body. Once you lose the body because you die, you have more emphasis by far on the astral senses. So the feelings, emotional feelings as we call them, that come through the astral body become much more intense, not interfered by any physical sensation because there's no physical anything in the astral world. It's all composed of astral energy. And the nature of the person's existence shifts dramatically. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight in a totally different way than I've described it before. And so this becomes a salvation. Now, why do I use that word? Because you are salvaging from some of your prior experiences and new ones that you have but are somewhat related to prior ones while you're physically alive. You're gaining much more of an astral awareness and eventually response, the ability to respond in a more astral way in the astral world. Life becomes much easier because you don't have the encumbering factor of the physical senses just overwhelming by a significant magnitude any of the emotional feelings coming through the astral body or the monastic or mental sense. It is actually a feeling in itself, but it's a sense coming from the mental senses. Those things are so subtle normally that we don't get it. But in the astral world, you're going to get huge amounts of astral feeling. And this will remedy part of the lack of total experience of life. So it's like a second time around. The same experiences are not repeated necessarily, but there's enough similarity. The life there in the astral world is fairly similar, and there's a lot of, we'll call it, overlapping of what life might have been for the person or each person while they were physically alive. Sure, there's some unique experiences and some differences. People change over the lifetime that they were alive physically, so there's not going to be the same necessary reactions or things. But there's still the commonality that is, by and large, there. And so it's one way to look at this is that it's another chance, a salvation of saving some of the life experience of astral feelings and then eventually the response to it in being able to co-create with one's creator. This would be love we're talking about mostly, and more of a universal kind than of a personal. And so people are able to get that second chance in that way. And so it's really appropriate to say that that by the grace of God, we go to a heaven-like, for some people, that's their definition, place to be, not forever, but to become closer to what we started from being, which was our soul. It's a journey back to the soul, by learning or re-understanding some of what the soul may have already understood, but with some new wrinkles in it and some growth. So each lifetime provides this kind of opportunity. And by and large, it's an opportunity to get over the fetters or problems that people have in being separated from their soul and being relatively selfish. So that is another great salvaging part or saving part of the experience. It allows us to deal with the parts of ourselves that are unusually selfish, but we generally gloss over and don't pay much attention to while we're physically alive, because the physical senses become just overwhelming. And people are just focused on them so much that there's only a little bit that is dealt with on the emotive side. Okay, so here we've got an amazing new way of perspective of what astral life is about. It's about getting over desires that are so strongly embedded in the nature of the astral body, because during physical life they're mostly ignored. So people left them there to kind of fester. They're sometimes referred to as glamours, but they're really fixed kinds of desires that just don't leave because people pay very little attention to trying to get over them. They sort of say, well, that's just the way I feel, so it's okay, right? Even though it's unloving and selfish and hurtful, maybe towards a whole bunch of things and people, we think, well, that's the nature of being human, you know. Well, it may be, actually, when people are physically alive, because they pay so little attention to trying to change it. And the few people who do try to change it are way ahead of the game, to say the least, because their experience, as we're going to see in astral life, is considerably different. So astral life is really qualitatively changeable based upon how someone lives while they're physically alive and chooses to live further while they're astrally alive. And then, of course, when we get to the mental aspects of this, we'll talk about that on a whole other, we'll say, level. But it's fascinating that so many people don't realize that they're living their life emotionally quite selfish, even when, to other people, they're labeled as being kind, loving, etc. In reality, they are only maybe slightly more of that than others, and mostly are very selfish. Isn't that strange? It's all a matter of perspective. And it's hard for us to judge those who are around us because we are so genuinely astrally selfish that even a little bit of difference we think is wonderful, but we don't even know how to deal with someone who is really astrally unselfish. Most of the time, those people who are really very astrally unselfish are misunderstood and oftentimes very badly treated, because people have wrong, very wrong misunderstandings, or wrong understandings of who and what they're really like. They are so different. They're really souls, or more soul-like, at least in an astral way, that people can't get what they're doing or why they're doing it. sounds like a bad reward for something so good. But that's a whole other part of the astral world, because one of the desires that's fixed, that is a biggie, is the desire to be appreciated by others and held in high esteem, nonetheless. So this is kind of a process, we'll say. So let's take a look at what happens. A person dies from the physical world, and within a very short time, they are connected at best to the physical world through only electromagnetic involvement, meaning that they're in their etheric body, and the physical world is almost absent from their ability to sense it in a way that is interactive. Now, I know that people are aware, if they've read what I've written or many other people have, that certainly some sense of the physical world remains while you're in the etheric part, or electromagnetic part, but that sense prevents you from being interactive. So you're not going to be able to do very much. You can observe, and with some training, you can somewhat hear what's going on. But sight, while sight is available, and the reason sight is available is because the frequency of light is so high, it's able to maintain integrity in the electromagnetic realm. Whereas sound, that's not true. Sound is not anywhere near as high a frequency. It's very low relatively to light. And so it takes a great deal of effort to be able to hear correctly anyway. But you can do it. I mean, you can use up the sense trying, but you can do it too. And for a while, people hear somewhat if they are in the etheric or electromagnetic part of the physical world. Now, you might be there, and some people would say, well, aren't you like a ghost? Well, a ghost technically is someone who's been there for more than the time most people stay. But because you're not really bound to anything, you can leave, you can do. It's really like just a way station, a few days, a few weeks most for most people. And a few months, yeah, you could start becoming a ghost. You could get attached to being in that state and not want to go to the astral world to live. That's an odd thing. It doesn't happen as often as we make it seem like it might. And when it does, it's a shame. It's a terrible shame, but it's not something that, other than making a lot of TV shows about it recently, it's not that big of a deal. It doesn't happen all that often. When it does happen, it's connected to a place and to things in that place. And people are being bound, so to speak, to want to experience that through their desires more than they have the desire to live in the astral world. So there's a contradiction or a paradox. And you only go to live in the astral world after you desire to be left with whatever sense you have here in the physical world is given up. You have to voluntarily give up the last little bit, or you don't leave. No matter how unfortunate and out of control the death experience was from the physical body, leaving the etheric part of the body is still a choice. Isn't that something? So you don't have much of a choice if, you know, a piano falls on top of you or something. But there's a tremendous choice that has to be exercised to leave the entire physical plane, which includes the electromagnetic part. It kind of like gives us some authority over the death experience. And it's good. It's a good thing because people know that they're making that choice to leave. It's kind of an interesting part of the whole experience. Now, for children, it's a little bit modified from that concept because a young child can't really grasp what's going on. And for others, under certain circumstances, people with certain mental illnesses or certain dementias, they don't really have the ability in self-structure to be able to make the decision. Once that takes place and the decision is no longer capable of being made, it's made for them by a being called a solar angel, sometimes assisted by a member of the next kingdom called the master. Those beings may get involved and just say, it's time to go because you're stuck here and that's it. And it does happen that way with some. But for most people, they actually have the choice. How do you like that? Okay, so what's the big deal then? You get to the astral world. Why is it that people end up, first of all, in different places? There's seven sub-worlds besides the A-sphere, which is for the folks who really don't want to have anything to do with souls anymore, aren't going back to being a soul. They are literally part of the group soul of evil, and they just want to do dark, evil things, and they are concerned about power and control for others. And so they're not really into the same things we're talking about. And I'm not going to deal much with any part of their life. That's something else entirely. All right, so, but for most people, they're going to live in a sub-world that is dimensionally focused on the astral senses, that has a time change and a the amount that energy follows thought changes, sometimes referred to as the quantum constant changes. And so people are able to change their environment pretty much by how they think astrally, which is called imagination. Well, we all know what imagination is. That's you may picture something, and there it is. So that's what happens. You picture something in your imagination. And it becomes, by affecting the astral energy around you, a thing, whatever that thing is that you want to create. And you can imagine big things, small things, whatever you want. But your imagination and even your whole life is determined by your desires. And these are astral desires. And they're the ones that seemingly are stuck in you and weren't met while you were physically alive, at least enough to cause them to be, we'll say, let go of. And instead, they become very strong, and they now take precedent over all other elements of life. So when a person gets to the astral world, these desires, which were somewhat overpowered by physical life, because the physical senses were so important, people had to have food, shelter, and clothing, and lots of money, and this or that, those things aren't needed, at least not in any way that we need them in the physical world, because you can get them just by imagining them, and they just appear. So it's a lot easier. So those things aren't really relevant. What is having what a person feels as missing. Now, some people want still the feeling of having physical things. Those folks usually end up in what is known as the seventh subworld, because that's their desire. Their fixed desire, which may be many different kinds, has a general class to it. The fixed desire is to have as many things that they may have been familiar with and didn't have enough of in the physical world, and now they have them in the astral world. Now, you don't have money, you don't go buy these things. You have to use your astral imagination along with your astral senses to create the things. The imagination is pushed out through the sense, and then the sense interrelates with the astral energy in the environment, and it literally, we'll say, gets the energy to conform to the imagination. But so a lot of the sense is used up in the process, as well as the imagination itself. And so there's a limitation to how much you can do of this sort of thing within any period of time. And that's, we'll say, the currency of the realm. If you want something, that's what it costs you to do it. Unless you get somebody else to do it for you, which some folks do. All right, so it's a kind of interesting place. The center that's used the most is sometimes referred to as a sexual center. And it's kind of a strange thing. It isn't all about sex, although there's certainly that is one of the desires. But it is about having control over things, and the things could even be another person. So you may want to have in your environment people that you want to control. And sometimes these people are actually residents of the seventh subworld. In other cases, they may not be. If they're not residents, then they're just imagined people which don't do or say anything that you don't already put into them. So after a while, they become rather boring to have as your interactional basis. So people do want to have interactions with other people. It's a kind of interesting, we'll call it, new slant on the old idea of having things in your world. To keep something that is made in the astral world takes little energy and little sense, provided nobody else is monkeying around with your stuff. But you see, most people want to have these things and live among and with others. Yeah, you know how that is. And because they don't care to be alone. And that causes some difficulty because other people's imagination and their senses can change and sometimes significantly alter the things that people create. And so that causes literally a challenge to the desires of one person versus the desires of another. It can get dicey under certain circumstances and certainly can waste a lot of the sense and imagination that a person has. Now, you notice in this we'll say, explanation, something unique is happening. The sense normally in the physical world, the senses, take in information. But in the astral world, they not only take in information, they give it out. So in the physical world, we notice that energy has pretty much one dimension to it. It goes in one direction only at a time. But in the astral world, it doesn't. It goes in two or more directions at the same time. And the direction of the energy moving in or out or who knows how many different directions is actually a new dimension to time and space. Some things that we absolutely cannot do when we're physically alive are second nature in the astral world. You could literally do, like we call broadcasting kinds of things in the internet. Could you imagine doing this in terms of using your sense and sending people feelings and pictures and emotive kinds of responses to each one in a separate way, all at the same time? You could do that in the astral world. You can't do that here. No. You can't even do it on a computer, really, because you can use different things to different people at the same time, and that's pretty amazing. So the dimension of the astral world allows energy to go to or from a person, and in some circumstances, depending upon the dimension they're on and their abilities, in multiple directions. So it's a fascinating kind of place from that standpoint. Two people could be in the same place in three dimensions, just like here we have three dimensions. Just someone who's standing in the same place should be standing on each other's feet, you know. But in the astral world, they could be not even near one another because of a fourth dimension of the direction of where they're focusing their energies. And because they're not focusing their energies in even similar ways, they don't even know the other one exists, even though in three dimensions they appear to be in the same place. Tell me that isn't a little strange. So you can see that this allows for a very different kind of life. It allows people to experience life in a more full way, and it gives them the opportunity to deal with these desires that are fixed in them with a greater latitude and more profound ways of interrelating with other people at the same time. And so it gives life a new way to be experienced. And we're talking about living in the astral world right now. So this new kind of experience allows people to eventually become much more loving over being selfish. That doesn't mean that they're immediately going to do that, but it eventually allows it because you can compare one experience to another in the same period of time. You can have multiple experiences and compare them. And some of them will be more giving or loving, and some will be more taking or selfish, And you can compare the results of the two or three or 10 or 100. And you, by having this kind of astral awareness, which most people have, it allows people to grow and to change more quickly about their desires. They start realizing each one of these fixed desires is a great anchor. It prevents them from being able to grow and from being able to experience more fully the meaningful elements of life, including the relationships of other people and other things. It's a grand place for learning how to be a much more soul-like and loving ways being. Now, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the seventh subworld, which is where I just sort of started from, or the highest part of the astral subworlds. The same thing could be stated. It's just that the desires become more and more, we'll say, spiritual in nature. They gain spiritual content and lose some of their more, we'll say, overly selfish aspects. You still can be very selfish and still somewhat spiritual, but at least it's not as grossly selfish. And that's part of the experience. That is one of the reasons that the astral world seems to have such a corrective value to most people. It allows people to really experience love in a more robust way. And it allows them to see the deficiencies they have and other people have in not being loving and being selfish with their feelings, their astral nature. And it's like having feelings on steroids, where they're just growing enormously from the way that the physics exists. This is and it's designed to do this. It was one of the reasons when I first did some astral traveling that I started to really see that there was God, because it was designed. The system was designed to get people to become more loving. And it was obvious, especially to me, maybe because I wanted to understand it, and that's a good thing, not necessarily to everybody that was in the astral world that I met, but to me it became obvious because I wanted so much to understand what the heck this place was. And gain some understanding of what it would be doing, why it's doing what it's doing. At first I thought it could be just random, but then I very soon came to the realization that it was something much more, and eventually that it was God. And I came to that conclusion, you know, kind of kicking and screaming. I wasn't like, oh, gee, I came here to find God. That wasn't my intention, but it certainly became the reality because it's the nature of the place that proves itself just by its beingness. That's the thing that's so neat. Well, we're going to go to a break right now, and I hope this is beginning to take on the shape of a show that you haven't heard before, even though you've heard shows about living in the astral world. This is a little different. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about living in the astral and the mental worlds. And I'm doing this show really from a different perspective. Yeah, I was just talking to someone who's in the studio with me about it. And, you know, the interesting thing is that this is more the way I discovered what the astral world was like. It was a long time ago, of course. It was decades ago. But the thing is that when I've taught it before, I gave different kinds of ways of seeing it. All those ways help. Tonight we'll call it the way to figure out really the basis of the concepts of the astral world. And so that may be what I'm really dealing with, a conceptual framework more than other things. So let's look at it from, again, the desire aspect. People who have these strong desires to, all the time that they were physically alive, they wanted to have more physical things than they had, and they wanted to have control over those physical things more than they felt that they did. They might have had some physical things, but they didn't feel like they had control over them. And some of them might have been a person or so, you know, maybe a child or a husband or wife. And so these desires become very strong. They are suppressed by the fact that the physical world senses are so much stronger that a person gets concerned about the actual physical things they do have, and also concerned about food, shelter, and clothing, whether they're going to have enough money for this or that, and many other things. And so the desire itself gets muted into a yearning, and it is not so that when they pass on, if that's their strongest desires, they end up in the seventh subworld. Now, many people think the seventh subworld is like some kind of punishment, which it is absolutely not. For the people who go there, at least for decades, they think they're in heaven. Now, why? Because most of their desires are met as soon as they imagine them and project them through their senses to cause the energy in the astral world to create whatever it is that they desire. So to them, that's what they always desired, and now they got it. You know, as they say, sometimes be careful what you desire. It may not be what you really want, but that's true. After a while, people use up their imagination and their senses, particularly the senses go pretty quick. And from that particular standpoint, they may over a short time, by relative standards, a few decades, lose enough sense so that they can't do this any longer. And then, interestingly, something else happens. It, simultaneous with the fact they are losing sense, they also lose some, on an average, not all people this happens to, but majority, they lose some of the desire itself. Now, you might say, why? Well, usually when you exercise a desire, it grows. So it doesn't go away. It actually becomes stronger. But after a while, when people begin to realize that the desire itself does not bring meaning into their life, because they get all they want of it in the beginning. I mean, it could be exaggerated amounts, truly. But even though they get these exaggerated amounts, their life doesn't become more meaningful. It becomes less. And they couldn't tell that that was the truth while they were physically alive, because they could never get that desire even close to being met while they were physically alive. So this is the opportunity to experiment in the excess. And the selfishness is permissive. It's allowed to be. It isn't like you're in hell and you're going to be punished, and therefore you're not going to get what you want. You're actually in what, for most people's belief system, would be called heaven, because you're getting all you want. Except it isn't what you really want. But you don't know that until you have the excess. Okay? And then the life becomes relatively meaningless. And other things start happening. The person does lose sense, a considerable amount, and they also lose some parts of their self. Now, what is a self? The self is the part of the person that is able to be conscious of everything else that exists around them. And so some of their consciousness diminishes, and that causes some level of suffering. And then, in addition, they lose some sense. And in addition, the final thing is, and this may take 20, 30, 40 or more years, which is not that much time, by the way, because there's a lot of time people live, even in the seventh subworld. But still, it's a lot of time. Let's face it, 40 years is a lot of time. And they get to the point where they say, well, is this all there is? Look at it. I got everything that I thought I wanted, right? Or most of it. And I don't find that life is meaningful. Now, we're not talking about happiness here. Happiness might be literally having exactly what you desire. But it goes much deeper and different than happiness. This is the part of life that means that the self is expanding. Your consciousness is expanding. You're becoming something greater in the process, not just in having things, but in being something yourself. That beingness is reduced and not gained by being a victim of your own desires, no matter what they are. And so the result is a less than meaningful life. Now, that's bad, because here you find suddenly that your life is less than meaningful. Your consciousness is diminished. You are suffering to some extent, and your senses are diminished. And you don't creatively imagine as much as you did before. Whoa, that's not a good combination. And it isn't. And it turns out that those people then can become victimized, if they do go too far over the line on it, by others. They try to use some of their senses to conserve their own, and so they take on other people's and use other people's senses. You can do that in the astral world. You can't do that, obviously, here in the physical. And so that's a danger, and there's danger of not only people doing it, but believe it or not, there's actually like animals and monsters that kind of do it. But and evil dudes from the true dark side, from the eighth sphere. But the real problem that happens to some people, but the real problem is that just when you start to become cognizant of the real nature of the issue, you have to now really work on becoming more sensible in an astral way. and having your creative imagination grow more, especially the creative side of the imagination grow more, while you are struggling. It's a tough job. The answer, by the way, and the solution is to become more mental and less astral, and to learn how to incorporate the remaining mental senses with the astral, with the mental ones taking superior position to the astral, which usually is not the case when people go to the astral world, at least in the beginning, and to use these mental senses to be focused out on helping and serving others. The big difference is, remember, that the direction of energy is part of the dimensional differences between the astral world and here in the physical world. Well, when the energy is moving away from a person, their consciousness grows, and it solves their problems that I just described. When it's moving towards them, it does the reverse. It collapses the senses. It causes them to be damaged. It causes the brain to not function very well, the astral brain now, and they lose some of their creative abilities using their imagination. All that happens because of the heat, we'll call it, of retained energy for being forced into their system. If you use the energy to serve others, the heat goes away and the problem goes away. So by a person becoming really focused away from themselves, in service to others, loving others, they gain freedom. Now, the trick is to do it not for the sake of becoming free or improving yourself, but do it because you really want to serve others. That's an important part of the equation. Otherwise, you end up with some of the energy going out, some of it coming in. You may have a net value of zero. Well, you may not get much worse, but you're not going to get a lot more meaning in life, you see. And that can actually happen in the astral world. We can go in more than one direction at the same time with energy. Wow. So that's why the physics of this place is so fascinating, because things have really changed. All right, now that's just the seventh subworld. And it's easier for us to understand that subworld to some extent because it's about things, and we understand what things are like because we have them abundantly around us. Now, when you move to the sixth subworld, those folks who end up there are not so concerned about the thing, the desire for a thing. So you don't want to have an automobile or an airplane. You just want to move, like you were in one or of either one or the other. And you want to be able to fly or go and travel without having a thing associated with it. Oh, that changes everything. And you want to feel all the feelings that you have from having things, but you don't necessarily want to keep the things around because the things, again, require more of your sense and more creative imagination, especially if other people are there interfering with them. So things take on less of an important nature, but the feelings that the things produced or interactively became part of are the element that people are seeking. So they seek to have excitement and fun and many other experiences, but they don't want to hold on to a bunch of things because the cost is not worth it. Those things don't really mean anything to them. Not everybody thinks and feels that way, but people in the sixth subworld do in comparison to those in the seventh. It's a big jump, a big change. All right. These people are still plagued by their desires, though. Their desire is to have a lot of feelings that they like to have. And it could be all kinds of things that they used to have and use. They don't keep the things anymore. They just want to have what the feeling was like to have the things. Even drugs. They don't need the drugs, per se. They just need to have the feelings of what the drug was like. So you see how that may change in comparison to the seventh subworld. Also, the direction of energy is a little differently understood. In the seventh subworld, everything I said about energy is correct, except that it's a little more complicated than I made it, because since energy could go in multiple directions at the same time, and some of those directions are towards yourself and some are away from yourself, you get a very complex woven picture of what a person is actually feeling about any kind of interactional experience. In the sixth subworld, this interactional mode becomes much more frenzied and intense than it is in the more controlled and organized, I would say, seven subworld experience. So the organization is thrown out, and it is placed as kind of almost a frenzy of experience. And there's no organization, none, or very little, I should say, in the sixth, because the energies are not designed deliberately by the person to follow or track what a physical thing would limit or regulate in terms of the experience. They don't want to have the physical things because they take too much of their sense and energy. So, but they pay a cost of not having what that thing would do to organize the way the energy interacts with them. So now the energies become wildly, I mean that word exactly as it sounds, wildly energetic and wildly random. And they like that. They actually, some people actually, that's what they're aiming for. Others may not. And so they can choose to avoid that and actually may save their senses to some extent. The problem is when you have this kind of disorganized type of wildness to the way the energies are moving, because there's no organization to them, person's senses diminish even more rapidly for the same amount of creative imagination. So you have a certain creative imagination. If you're using this six subworld kind of way of sensing and using it, the frenzy of the experience maybe, and the excitement of the experience might be much higher, but the cost in terms of use of sense is considerable and even faster in these particular kinds of circumstances than those who live in the seventh subworld. Now, this is a little hard to understand for some people, but it's I'm describing it as best as I can because there's nothing like it here in the physical world to describe. I mean, you can't do what I'm saying in the physical world. The physics doesn't allow you to do it. There, in the astral world, you can get away with it. It's part of the experience. So some people live for this excitement and frenzy that is unique to this particular subworld and to the astral life. They think that it's okay to do that, but they do so with an economy of, we'll say, a gross economy for the total amount of reserve of energy that they have. So if they use up too much of their senses, they may curtail all their activities for a while so that they can go back to redoing the same or similar experiences, but without completely destroying or using up most of their sense, and to still conserve some of their creative imagination at the same time. That's pretty strange. And yet that's the way some people live their life in the sixth subworld. So the sixth subworld has almost a different set of, we'll say, goals for the people who live there. In comparison, people in the seventh subworld have a goal to have the things that give them the feelings and regulate how those feelings are going to be experienced, to have those things at whatever level they always desire to have them. getting rid of old things, or most of them, people in the sixth subworld just want to have the experience, not even near the experience of having the thing, like people in the seventh subworld, but exaggerated, maybe tenfold. A huge amount more. They say, well, what the heck? If it's going to feel good to have this thing at this level, why not make it 10 times more? Not everybody does this at that level, but there's quite a few people who do. And so they exaggerate things to those kinds of levels, and then their life becomes addicted to the amount of intensity and frequency of the intensity of sensation rather than having any things at all, actually. They could care less about things. As a matter of fact, they may just abandon some things that they even have. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter. And the interesting part about this in terms of relationships between people is that in the seventh subworld, containing and holding on to relationships is pretty important. So even if people have numerous sexual partners, they want to keep them around. Whereas in the sixth subworld, nobody cares about keeping anybody around, anything around, because they don't care about the thing. They care about the intensity and frequency of the experience, and whoever and whatever they come across that gives them that, that's fine. And, yeah, they can imagine people and do experiences like that. I will call it astral masturbation. But in reality, their greatest frenzy comes from having different people continuously changing and not being regular or anything, so that the kind of experience is constantly mobile and changing. It's a crazy place. Frenetic would be a very subtle kind of explanation in comparison to what it really is like. So it's beyond frenetic, beyond constant and we'll say intense, and it lacks meaning for the following reason. Now we're going to get into this question again about the meaning issue. Eventually, if no one thing or series of things has any special nature to it than any other series or specific thing, including people, then the meaning in life is only a question of activity and not one of consciousness or of creation. So you see, this leads a person into a place in which the net result is extreme loneliness and a kind of strange isolation. Oh, you want to be around huge numbers of people, but none of them have any significance to the kind of long-term relationship that people usually give to any experience. As a matter of fact, after a very short time, they become meaningless to each person interactively. So the collectiveness of all these meaningless experiences is a life of meaninglessness. And that's the way that people discover that these kinds of desires, fixed desires, glamours, lead people into this place of meaninglessness. It's different than the seventh subworld, but it is nonetheless significant because it causes people to fairly rapidly become quite sorrowful and miserable. Definitely faster than it takes place in the seventh subworld. So, and you might say, well, okay, why don't people just say, I'm not going to do that anymore? Well, again, you've got to be able to make the shift. You've got to be able to change. We already went through what the seven subworld people eventually do, but people in the six have another problem, and that is that not only do they finally realize that they have a meaningless life, life is not have anything that's worthwhile to them, and not only have they used up a significant amount of their senses and their ability to creatively imagine, but another problem has arisen, and that is that in order to truly be able to correct the problem, they have to be able to organize and get together with other people who are similar to their level of meaninglessness and, we'll call it, suffering from loss of consciousness. And it's a difficult issue because, and it does happen, it eventually happens, but it can't happen in the environment that they usually created for themselves. They have to leave that environment and find other parts of the astral subplane that they're on, the sixth, where they can create a new kind of way of relating that literally slows everything down, somewhat of necessity because their senses are not working all that great, but does something that's unique, we'll say, to their misguided life experiences. Now, this could be, again, many decades, maybe even 100 years of this frenetic, super frenetic lifestyle they had had. And what many people do is that reach this point is they start to focus, with some help usually from people from higher subdimensions come and give some assistance in this. They start to try to understand how to keep their focus of their sense moving the energy away from and out from themselves instead of into themselves to stimulate. They at first become, they try it and they become bored, or they become, we'll say, a feeling of pain in their astral centers because they don't get much stimulation out of the necessary changes that they have to do by focusing out on others, because focusing out into others is, there's a no receptive value there. You're not going to get anything rushing in that's going to cause any frenzy in your centers, your astral centers. And they still have some desire to get some kind of feeling back. But the only cure for this condition is to actually get the full focus out. And you can say, well, why can't two people just one focuses and the other one stops and then one other focus and they stop? And they do a little bit of that, actually do. But the way it works best is when you don't do it with somebody who is just trying to get the same thing in reverse. That doesn't really work very well. It's the same thing I explained earlier. You can't do it for the wrong motive. It just doesn't work for you. You've actually got to go and start helping other people who may be just as bad off or worse than you are without expecting anything in return. And then you can meet other people and have more of a natural, quote-unquote, a way of relating with them. This is not so easy to do. And people have to come to this state of mind themselves in order to solve this enigma. And people from the higher realms, usually from the third, but also more frequently the second and first subworlds, come and try to be of some assistance in this relatively difficult time for these people. Like I said, they may have been here for 100 years and have really screwed things up pretty wildly in themselves, and now they're suffering. And so this is a way to try to be of some service to them. It sometimes works. Believe it or not, it really does work. And some of these people really want to leave the sixth subworld, and they can't. You can leave a subworld when your consciousness is high enough so so your senses work in a higher subworld enough so that you stay conscious and you don't fall asleep. And as long as you can do that, you can live anywhere you want. But these higher subworlds, the consciousness factor becomes much higher than where most people can just instantly change to. So here again, if we look at how life is in these two lower subworlds, that people are pretty screwed up. Most of them pay high penalties for a life of very grossly selfish desire in an astral way. And they have opportunities to get out of it. It's not easy. It's quite hard. And they get help. They get help from people who live in higher subworlds who want to just be help everybody. Anyone who asks for help, they usually can get it, amazingly. The astral world is still, all of the subworlds, is still more loving than is the physical world. So charity is pretty much there, and so is spiritual service. Charity is, of course, not as effective because people don't need things. They need love. All right, so let's move on then. So we know, and there's a lot more to say about these aspects of the subworlds, but right now I'm trying to deal with the concepts. And so let's move on to the concept of the desires of people who exist in the fifth subworld of the astral plane. The fifth subworld is really focused mostly on the control aspect of feeling. People want to have their desires met, but they recognize that the two subworlds below them, which they can sense, by the way, to some extent, are not very effective because they can see the people in the seventh subworld want to have all these things, and those things eventually become like anchors to them and screw up their lives. And they want the repetition constantly of feeling the feelings that they have from having the things. The things can be relationships even with other people, but they want to constantly feel what they desire. And they recognize that the constant desire to feel is a poison that eventually destroys the senses and destroys the consciousness of the person, and people suffer immensely from it. So they see that in the seventh, and then in the sixth they see the frenzy and the craziness and the very swift rate at which people decelerate into a complete loss of consciousness and a lot of suffering. And they say, well, I don't want to do that. So they say, why don't we manage our desires? We'll manage them. Now, some of the people think they can manage them best as a collective. So they get together with other people, and they're all going to cooperate together to manage their desires so that no one person is going to cause another person to have too much of one desire and too little of another met, and vice versa. They actually live this way. They create their whole society, their whole rules, based upon the exchange of desires on a relatively constant level so that nobody is really going to be taxed too much from it. Nobody's going to be overwhelmed too much from it. And their senses will remain for hundreds of years at pretty much the same level. Now, for those who are listening, you're probably saying, so what's wrong with that? Sounds pretty good. Well, if that sounds good to you, that's probably where you will end up. But let me give you the downside to this thing. Those are the folks who now are in the majority. Now, there's a minority of people that want to preserve their desires, but they want to do so while maintaining their ability to use their creative imagination as they see fit. Because the people in the first case, they control their desires by curtailing a good deal of their creative imagination. And they actually do this by policing their own creative imagination so that it doesn't get too far out of hand, which would cause more activity in their senses than is good for everybody else. And the activity in the senses, again, pushes energy out of the senses. That just takes energy in. It goes in both directions. And it taxes the people. So they actually have thought police. Well, remember, thought is creative imagination in the astral world. And so these people go around and literally, collectively, try to restrict the over-imagination of people who are creating too much pressure on everybody else from their senses, putting out what their creative imagination is exceeding in its level. Unbelievable. And of course, you end up in a society that's relatively unimaginative, right? And nobody is going to be any much different than anybody else. They're all going to dress the same, live in the same kinds of places, and follow the same kind of rules. And, you know, this is the kind of place that they find works best for what they want to do, which is preserve their senses while they still keep most of the important desires that are fixed to them. So they're not getting rid of the desires, they're just managing them, right? Okay, but there's another group, like I was saying a minute ago, that says, okay, well, wait a second. We don't like that, those folks, you know, because there's no freedom. You can't create anything beyond a certain level, or else you're going to get thought policed. Now, they do it by groups, you know, get a half a dozen people together, and they all think against the person who's trying to overimagine, and it cuts down the person's ability to think. And they actually train themselves to do this so they get good at it. All right, but that other folks, they say, hey, we're just going to leave them. We won't live around them, and then that pretty much prevents the others from doing too much control on them. And they choose to live by being as creative as possible and still maintain their senses as much as possible. But they still work by their desire to be free, and they don't care about anybody else's freedom. They care about their own personal freedom. So it's a very selfish kind of creative system, and they're still managing their desires, aren't they? They're more free. They do create more, but they are managing their desires because ultimately they aren't trying to help anybody else to be free. They aren't trying to help anybody else to do anything better. They're really not even very much loving, more loving than the other folks. They're just trying to get their own way in having whatever desires they collectively can use together be used, and the ones that are uniquely different, they kind of segregate it and keep it away from everybody else. But at the same time, they are still able to sort of live together. Sort of being that they don't have to regulate their entire life because they don't live following the same kind of rule-driven principles. But at the same time, they do not in any way try to force anybody else to live as they are living. They just simply agree that living close enough so that they can get something from each other and not too close to interfere with each other is the answer to managing their desires. Sounds good, right? Well, there's a problem with that. Because each person really doesn't care, doesn't really love the other people. They tolerate them. They accept them because they're like them. It's selfish, and they want to allow them to be creative, but they don't try to help them be more creative. Because after all, that would take from them. They just let them. And it's a fairly selfish place, just like, so these people live in groups, but they're doing somewhat the same thing. Both of these general conditions of people are very much selfish, and they're just trying to manage in different ways. Now, ultimately, this system doesn't work. People in both parts of the spectrum that I just described eventually find themselves, after usually a couple hundred years, sometimes longer. This is years in their time frame, by the way. I'm using the word years, and some people may not realize that time is dilated. So that there's a lot more time in the astral world than there is where we are. And it has to do with the energy barriers between the worlds and how much energy exists from one side to the other, and that causes a change in time. But I'm not going to go into the physics of that right now. Okay, so when you have this sort of thing happening, eventually people wear out anyway. It may be instead of 20 to 40 years, it may be 200 to 400 years. But eventually it still takes its toll because people are being selfish. Management of selfishness does not get rid of selfishness. It diminishes the amount of destruction to the sense over the same period of time. But it doesn't change the outcome. People still suffer the same amount, just over a longer period of time. Okay, so eventually, on both sides of the spectrum, whether they're seeking the freedom side or seeking the more managed, controlled side, we'll say. Both of them are managed, but the more controlled side. Then the result is that people reach a point where their life is still meaningless. Okay, well, it took 300 years, but they're now meaningless. Instead of 30, it took 300. And they find themselves in a meaningless life. And depending upon how much longer they have left to live, they may be able to get out of it. Those people then try to congregate together. And when they do, they really seek a more mental understanding and answer. And again, it comes from people coming from the higher realms who will come and teach these folks. Now, this third group usually are the older, quote-unquote, people who seek to have a meaningful life that may be far less managed and obviously structured, but and even less free in some respects, but is more loving. And they finally get it. They finally say, gee, if we're more loving, we could be both more creative and more free. But we got to be more loving first. And they get that. And within maybe 50 years or so, some of them break out of that and are able to go live in the fourth subworld. Because that's a more common, we'll say, likelihood than in the lower subworlds below the fifth, because those, the chances of getting out are slimmer because people are much lower in consciousness. They can't make it. But anyway, so eventually you can see that this is a common outcome. Does everybody? No, everybody doesn't make it out. I mean, maybe 20-25%. Get to the consciousness level high enough to be able to get to the next subworld where they can live the remainder of their life in a more creative and free way together. And this is really kind of the goal that many people in the fifth subworld have after they've been there for hundreds of years and just said, you know, this. Remember, the level of meaninglessness equals the same level as people living in the lower subworlds. There really isn't. The only difference is the time factor before you reach the level of meaninglessness. And the interesting thing is some people might argue maybe it's better to reach it earlier, except that you still lose your consciousness and you may not make it out, and then you might suffer worse. It's a difficult problem. There's not an easy answer, and each person is somewhat individual in the way they go through it. Okay, so it's interesting. I hope that this is making a lot of sense to people, because a lot of people say, well, what are the astral subworlds really like? And this is kind of more of a conceptual framework of what is really going on and how they're constructed. They're constructed to, again, provide a vehicle for people to get back to being a soul. And part of that vehicle is self-discovery. And also self-creation, and undo the destruction that you do to yourself at the same time. All of this is taking place through the many years of time people spend in these subworld situations. Remember, you're living a long, much longer life. And during that life, almost all the focus, again, is on the astral sense, not the physical. allows people a, we'll say, a better way of understanding their emotional feelings and that of other people. Gives them a much clearer picture over time. All right, so what happens if someone makes it to the fourth subworld, which is the glamour that's there is the desire to, if for other people to find one or a person special and spiritual and perfect, even. They seek this kind of constant approval from others, and they want to look good. In a physical sense, yes, or at least the way they present themselves as a representation of physical, not physically there, but and also they want to appear as being more spiritual, because they recognize that life is a spiritual journey, more so than people on the fifth, sixth, or seventh subworlds do. They have that perspective because their consciousness is a bit higher. So people in this realm are trying to impress each other. Yes, they have a lot of glamours about how they appear to other people. They want to seem special and creative and helpful and loving. Yet they're still selfish, because that's their desire, is to have that. All right, so how do you deal with that? Well, people, when they first go to the fourth astral subworld, really believe that they're in heaven. I mean, everybody believes they're in heaven to some extent because, oh, gee, I'm getting all my desires met. But there's a feedback loop in the fourth subworld that kind of makes it even stronger, and that is that not only are all the desires seemingly being met right away when someone arrives in the fourth subworld, but everybody else is putting on like they are perfect and like super angel beings, you know. So, you know, if everybody's doing it, well, it must be, right? And it has a hypocrisy to it that is kind of... If you're more conscious than they are when you get there, these people look silly, because they're it's obvious that they're not as conscious as they say they are, but everybody's doing it, so it's like a big act. Now that's not to say that people aren't either creative, because they are very creative in their imagination. And especially in making creative astral things. Now, not things that are replicas of things that exist in the physical world. That's the seventh subworld people. That's their folly. But people in the fourth astral subworld want to create things that are unique to the astral world. And they are really unique things. They are different than anything we have here, because the physics is different there. And they use this new physics to create some very interesting stuff. But they value somewhat themselves and others by how much those others create things. Well, and if they're beautiful, at least in the sense that they provide some element of improvement in the sense of those that experience them. And they do that to some extent. So there is some beauty there. But it's also scarred by the ugliness of the selfishness of the people wanting to appear like they are so creative and beautiful and all that you would expect to find in an angelic kind of part of the universe. So they fool themselves. So they believe and want to believe that all of them are these great people who deserve to be in God's grace. After a while, of course, the senses start to diminish because they're being selfish. And the creation of astral beauty, astral things, has a good deal of limitation to it, because it doesn't go really very deep. in the concept of soul level of giving or soul level of love. And since the soul level of love is missing in the creation of the way these things interact with everybody and what they do for everybody, well, they do some nice things, but they're not at that really deep level of soul. And after a while, people become, I wouldn't say bored with them, they actually become almost hostile to them because they don't fulfill their original promise. Oh, this item or that item is going to make you really spiritual. Just wear it or just use it. You know, you can imagine some commercial in the fourth astral subworld. Well, just use this for 30 days and you will become much more a spiritual being. Yeah, and but that stuff gets old. People start realizing it's a fallacy. It's not true. It's a lie. And after a while, people begin to realize collectively they're living a lie. Well, they're certainly available to be taught by people from the higher realms who usually come and help them to realize that this hypocritical lifestyle can be changed and they don't have to be trapped in it. And they can still live in a beautiful place. They don't have to live in an ugly place, but they can be focused on what the real values of spiritual life is rather than the superficial ones. And that really changes the perspective. It helps many people to try to raise their consciousness so that a significant number, as much as close to half, actually leave the fourth astral subworld before they fully lose all of their sense and can't do so otherwise. So it's a big deal. That's really a major part of life there is to not stay if they can leave. But only for the folks that have been there for hundreds of years. The people who newly arrive get very engrossed in the lies of the of this semi-spiritual life that people live. It's not fully not spiritual, but it's just not fully spiritual. And so they get so trapped in that that it could take a long time for them to get out of it. It's an interesting scenario because they live together. It isn't like they're not together. They're not connected. They are connected. They are together. And yet, even with this connection, they don't have the ability to see, the younger people don't, what the older people have already discovered. Isn't that interesting? Now you can ask yourself, well, how can that be? They live together. This is the astral world where people know how each other feel, right? Yes and no. When people are in the delusional belief that how you look and how you function in certain ways and where you live and what you do in each moment is how spiritual you are, that is, of course, that's all the illusion side. That is very convincing when everybody else is doing the same thing, seemingly. And the people who aren't doing that aren't doing any of that. They are doing something so different you don't notice. And what they're doing is they don't care about what they create in astral form that's beautiful or not. They don't care actually if they appear sometimes to really be selfish because they still have some of that. They care about how much can they serve in each minute that they exist. And they do an evaluation almost continuously of themselves. Am I serving enough at this particular moment? The younger folk aren't doing that. Once in a while they do, but most of the time they're not. And so they can't see, well, the younger people can't see the people who've been there for a long time. And it's amazing watching it happen, because you can see it happen if you see the interactions. It's a strange thing, too. It's a very strange thing. So people congregate based upon these two great differences in reality. They actually choose to be around people of one persuasion or the other. It's fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. And it's a It's a beautiful place, by the way. The fourth subworld is truly has great beauty in a number of ways. Yet, the places that are most beautiful are not the ones that have the immediate superficial element of beauty, at least, striking you. It's the beauty that comes from those people who are just so amazingly working on serving others that the environment itself takes a second place. It's not that it doesn't count, but it takes a second place to how much it's really serving. It's an important part of the differences between one side of society and the other. At any rate, the fourth subworld is kind of like the place where people really are concerned about being spiritual, even from the get-go. It's just they don't get it right until later. And the desire to look good and to be right, right in the sense of living style, not right in terms of mental issues. So we'll get to that part, but that's a different thing. And to present yourself in a way in which you look best diminishes over time. And so people don't put much time or energy into it as they become more mature in a astral sense and more loving, more soul-loving in their way of dealing with others. Fascinating place. I took a while before I got to the fourth subworld in some of my very early in life experiences in this realm. But the point is that the difference is dramatic between the fourth subworld and the fifth, and it's dramatic between the fifth and the sixth and the sixth and the seventh. So there is a significant change in the consciousness of people, which changes the nature of life itself. Because everything in the astral world is created by the beings that live there, and particularly human beings have dramatic effect on life. Everything that exists because of higher beings creating it. It's proof that life is self-created, but you can't see it in the physical world because the physical world seems to give us the impression of the opposite. But in the astral world, particularly when you examine from one subworld to the next, it becomes so obvious that we create reality. So obvious. And that has a tremendous physics thing about it, with the quantum constant changing from one subworld to the next. And that means energy follows thought greater than its own, at a much higher and higher rate as you move into higher realms. And all kinds of strange things happen, literally, as people choose to think. Okay, so eventually life in the astral world reaches a more monastic, pitch. That means the mental side of existence dominates the person's life rather than the astral side. So the desires that a person has become more split between what they think in mental terms and what they feel in astral terms. And so this dichotomy between those two parts of them becomes a struggle, and that struggle then causes a change in consciousness that a person wants to express and be mentally sensible as possible while they still feel, okay, that's the astral part of it, while they still feel in an emotive sense that they are getting from others recognition of their mental abilities at the same time while they are able to be loved and get love and give love to others. So it's a kind of strange combination, almost like the two sides of the person are now in balance, so to speak, and they're working together like 50-50, so that their desires to to have, receive love, and to give love, which are about equally split, are equally met by their desire to at the same time not even be driven by any astral desire, but be driven by the desire, it is still a desire, to be mentally aware at an equal level to the amount that they feel like being loved and or giving love. That's people who live in the third astral subworld. It's a very strange kind of place because of these unique qualities of near equal splits in these conditions that I just described. It produces a quirky kind of society because the people who live there are constantly trying to maintain the strange balance between mental awareness sense and astral sense. Yet, they don't want to give up their desires. They still have a desire to be mentally aware, and they still have a desire to be astrally loved, even though they want to give love astrally, and they want those two to be balanced or about equal to each other. Strange. And this causes the society that they live in to have all of the tension that comes, and I call it tension, between having such a kind of strange balance that is not normal for humans who are physically alive or who live anywhere in the lower subworlds to the third world. Now, what are these things that are so important to people in the third world? They love to create the society that they exist in a as an expression of their mental abilities. They love technology. They love invention. They want to have the society as advanced as possible in all of those ways, and they want to use those ways to give to others. They are truly loving. Remember, they're loving half the time. That's more than anyone in the astral subworlds below them. Nobody's at that level. They want to love at least half the time, but the other half of the time they want to get something. And that's a bad news thing. Now, sometimes they exceed over half lovingness, and they do it in a really weird way. What they'll do is they'll make a whole bunch of sacrifices that so they won't get in return as much love as they're giving. But then they compensate for that lack of getting love back by thinking that they're doing so much better that they actually believe that they have advanced in their mental abilities much further than they probably have. But the most important thing is they actually think themselves to be special because they have reached these much higher levels, they believe, which is temporary, of being loving. Temporary in the sense it might last a year or two. And then they fall back to the middle part where they are half loving and half wanting to be loved. It's very strange. And you can see this kind of thing going on in people's lives all over the place. It's a very strange place. And they never do get past the point where they become fully focusing out and loving it all the time. They just play with it, so to speak. And then as soon as they get into their mental part of themselves and say, well, see, I'm really special because now I have this whole thing figured out, and now I'm really, really special from everybody else, it discounts and it lowers their consciousness back to a lower state. It doesn't make them more conscious. It reduces it. So this constant conflict between thought in the mental part of themselves and their astral side is a kind of unique problem. And it does eventually go away. The strangest thing happens. They lose their senses, of course, from all the struggle going back and forth. There's a constant state of tension in the younger people, younger being less than a few hundred years old. And they eventually reach a point where they can't use the technology that they eventually or they had created, even individually or as a society. They find it too difficult to comprehend or use. And they leave the society because they can't live in it. And sometimes they're prevented from returning. Unbelievable. And yet, that's the next stage. The next stage is to come to the conclusion that this idea that you can balance your mental side with your astral side, creating a perfect person, when the mental side is filled with egotism and the astral side is filled with desires still, it just doesn't work. They don't get that you don't take two sides that are obviously flawed and put them together, and you don't come out with something better. You come out with a mess, and that's the mess they create. Now, the interesting thing is that the older folks realize that. They realize that the whole system is nonsense and it doesn't work right. They don't necessarily solve the problem for themselves, but they do at least realize that a lot of this was misguided. Now, there are, again, people from higher realms, the second and first subworlds, who come and try to teach these people in the third that, you know, this stuff you're doing isn't working. You know, you're trying to balance something, both sides, which are imperfect and have some serious problems. You got to not be egotistical. You got to be humble. And humility is not a quality that is well tolerated in the third subworld, at least among the people who are younger. And then at the same time, you not only have to be humble, but you need to stop having the desire to get as much as you give, even though you sometimes exceed it and get it up to maybe three-quarters of the time you're giving. You fall back because you still have it in the background. You just suppress it. You sacrifice it. You keep it from coming through, but it eventually does because you still want it, even if you can't or choose not to have it for a while, a year or two. Like I said, it might be a long time. And so they try to show them that this route is not the way to go. There are superior methods of spiritual discipline which will resolve these conflicts that these folks are creating for themselves. They teach us, but it doesn't necessarily get through because people who are egotistical don't get the whole concept in a spiritual way that's being taught. And they tear apart the mundane parts of it so that they don't see the truth. It's unfortunate, but that's the trend, we'll say. So conceptually, you could say the third subworld is a place of conflict. But it's still, and this is going to be hard to understand, the people who live there are higher in consciousness, both mentally and astrally, than people, say, in the fourth subworld. They just live a life that is a bit more stressful and more conflicted because they have chosen this, we'll call it, manner, which I call the third ray method, which is more militant about themselves and eventually towards each other sometimes, in how to live. It's a mistaken notion, but one that comes from them being dominated by this type of energy, which is so strong. Each subworld is contaminated, we could say, by the kind of astral energy that corresponds to the center that is most dominant in a person. And so fourth subworld has more fourth ray energy focused through it than fifth ray energy or third. And each one corresponds to that energy being more dominant there and has a greater effect on the way the people function because that center is going to be stimulated more. Now, each center works with other centers, too, but the dominant center is the center that is the focus of where most of the astral energy is focused from. And fascinatingly, it's all created from the people themselves. In other words, it's self-selected. It isn't like the astral world was created and people went to it. People go to it, and they create it as they interact with it. That's the truth. more third-race energy in the third subworld because the people who go there choose to exist that way, choose to live that way, choose to create their world that way. Amazing stuff. All right. So when we challenge the environment, we begin to see that in every one of these instances so far, the dominant factor has been the desire for some kind of outcome that was external to the person. That desire has to do with the energies, as I just described. And for that reason, from the third to the seventh subworld, including, I guess, the eighth sphere, if you want to put that in there too, all of those subworlds are actually worlds that are expressions of form. They really have to do more with the element of the third part of God's mind. They're not spiritual places per se. They certainly have a good deal to do with some elements of spirituality, and people can become more spiritual in living there because that's the purpose of it. But they are strongly influenced by desires that have something to do with the nature of form itself or energy. And energy is a dominant factor in those subworlds. Now, how is that different when we go to this, like the second subworld in concept? Well, the second subworld, well, you could say, well, okay, there's no question that people have dominant desires. The desire is to have an understanding of God, to be closer to the Creator. These folks don't want to just go to heaven and be in heaven for the sake of, you know, how they look or how they feel. They want to be in heaven because they want to be closer to God. And that's a different kind of desire. It's a spiritual desire. It's still a desire, by the way, but it's a spiritual desire. It's a desire to be part of one's own Creator. And people who end up in the second subworld, either because they've elevated their consciousness while in living in a lower subworld, or because they went there because they lived their life in the physical world in a more spiritual way, than not. And that's what it takes. You've got to have lived your life in the physical world dominated by spiritual thought and spiritual needs. It means also that they didn't yet resolve all those issues because they're in the astral world. I mean, if you go to the astral world, which almost everybody is going to go to the astral world that has lived in the physical, you're still dealing with some element of desire that was unmet. And in this case, it's the desire to understand God more. And for some people, that understanding comes from a traditional, we'll say, relationship with a religious viewpoint of God. Well, the problem is that the astral world does an amazingly good job at convincing people that most religions are not correct about what happens when you die. There's some things that obviously resemble what you might read in some versions of different Bibles and some versions of various religious orders or what they teach, but there's enough differences to obviously create a good deal of turmoil. And so that's the astral world is you know, people are, if nothing else, confused. And I think if you're going to the second astral subworld, the confusion is of a more intense nature, because since the desire to be there, that the overwhelming fixed desire is to understand God. And if your understanding comes from, prior understanding comes from a certain viewpoint, religious viewpoint, then if it doesn't match what your experiences are, you have conflict. And that's one of the major conflicts for people living in the second astral subworld, is to get over that. And it's usually done gradually through realizing that you don't go and you don't come to the astral world to get something from God. isn't taught that way in most religions. And that's where the problems arise. People who go to the second astral subworld are in conflict with their own religious viewpoints, and they also are confused about how to live a spiritual life. The good news is that instead of people coming from other subworlds, usually are people right there who have gotten past that. And after a couple decades, most people do. They actually realize that, you know, this is a life here where you participate with others together to co-create more of God. You not only do it in this subworld, but you are responsible for everybody you can come in contact with who needs your help in any of the lower subworlds. And it's a cost to pay to go to a lower subworld, by the way, because in the lower subworlds, time is not dilated as much. So every minute you spend there, you lose a lot more time than if you stay in the world in the second subworld. And people could live, and some do, for a millennia, 1,000 years of astral time in the second subworld. But some of that time will be sacrificed if they go to serve in the lower subworld. And not all of them are willing to do that sacrifice because it's tough. And the willingness to make that kind of sacrifice on a regular basis for a long period of time usually requires enough consciousness to live in the first subworld, where you have to have even a greater both understanding and willingness to co-create with God. And then those folks they don't care about how much time they live in one subworld or the next. So to them, it's all about service, and that's what they're there for. Whereas people in the second subworld are concerned about having God have a certain viewpoint of them, but also that they're getting something from God. And this is, it's not to diminish their beingness by expressing it this way, but the desire to get something from God isn't necessarily, oh, God's going to give me a new toy to play with or do this, or maybe a new relationship with somebody, or God's going to do this or that. Those things are actually not part of the problem that people have in the second subworld. That you find that more in the lower subworlds. But in the second subworld, what they want from God is God's recognition of their goodness and God's expression of love for them as being a chosen one, a special one. They want to be special, not like people who are in the fourth subworld where they put on airs about it, but because they don't care about how they look to other people. They care about how they look to God. And they want to know from God that they are special. And, of course, that's exactly what they don't get. They don't get it. Now, it's such a strange thing, because desires are met in the lower subworlds of form very easily. You can create them ad infinitum, as long as your senses are good and your imagination is good. The problem is, for people in the second subworld, they're caught in this problem of how do you get God to give to you if, in order for God to do that, it has to come from God and not from yourself. Therefore, you can't imagine that God's doing it, because you'll know that it's not God doing it. It has to truly come from God. And the problem is that that's the lesson. The lesson is God doesn't give or bestow upon a person the official spiritual badge, merit badge, we'll call it, of being a virtuous person. you bestow it upon yourself by being self-forgetful and not seeking it. Okay, I know it sounds a little, you know, everybody's thinking, well, wait a second, what are you saying? It sounds a little contradictory, I know, but that's the secret of the enigma. And trying to explain that enigma, that problem, to someone who's like just arrived, a relatively new arrival to the second subworld, is very difficult to do because that's not what they were taught. That's not what their expectations were, and it's not what their desires are. And so they've got to get over that. And it could take a decade, 2 decades or more before people really do get through that. It's tough to do. And it can only come through their own experimentation, their own chosen way to be creative, and usually with the help of others who are already doing it. And you sort of eventually join them after you get over the shock that it's not going to happen the way you want it. It's a strange thing, and it's built into our present system that here on physical Earth, there is so much distortion about the reality of life in other dimensions. That life even exists in other dimensions for some people. So it's a real problem because what are you going to do about it? You see, you've got to come up with something to hang on to. And initially, people reject the folks that are doing this already because they think that they're the deluded ones because, after all, they're not doing it the way they were taught that people should be doing it, so they must be doing something wrong. And when they finally realize they're not doing something wrong, it's usually, like I said, a decade or two before they get it. They say, oh, wait a second. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Maybe I create this in myself, and God doesn't give it to me because I did something right or wrong. The eventual understanding of us being a part of our Creator is the secret to the answer, but it's foreign to most people's thought processes for a long time, even those that make it obviously to the second subworld, which is not a low subworld of consciousness, it's a high one. And it's the first of the spiritual subworlds. So fascinatingly, this whole thing works out to be some amazing, we'll call it change, that takes place really through a person breaking through their own illusion of what it means to be self-created. And what that means in terms of love. It's a really interesting equation. All right, let's move on to the first astral subworld, because I want to still talk about the mental world. We haven't got that much more time left. Okay, so when we look at this from the standpoint, who makes it to the first subworld? Well, a lot of people who go to the second can make it to the first. But it's hard to get to the first because people in the first are functioning like their creator. They have to actually live the life of their creator. They can't be caught in the stuff, all the stuff I've talked about. All the things, the illusions, that are the astral illusions that people have in all the lower subworlds, including the second, have to be gone. That means that those people have relatively clear, is the word, astral bodies. They don't have a lot of fixed desires. Their only major fixed desire that is common is the desire to be willing to be sacrificial and willing to create at the cost of self-destruction. And that doesn't, a lot of people say, what's wrong with that? They're willing to do that. That's okay, isn't it? Well, yes and no. The willingness has to be only when it is absolutely called for, and never, never when it is something other than, we'll say, an expression of the needs of others. It can never come from the need of yourself. And that's where things get kind of murky, because it's very hard to determine the differences between those two states, especially in real time while you're serving other people. But it can be determined, and it is a necessity to be in constant service in the first astral subworld. Also, the need or desire to just be creative sometimes is a misnomer, because sometimes creation is not the answer. Preservation is of what was created by others, and sometimes other factors as well. So consequently, there's a lot of illusions that revolve around the first part of God's mind, which has to do with purpose and creation and will and sacrifice and all these things. And those illusions have to be dealt with, and you have to somewhat deal with them even before you get to be able to be conscious in the first subworld. So you don't just get there and say, well, I'll work on it now, because you won't get there otherwise. And people in the first subworld give up a good deal of their astral life in time, in the quotient of time, to be of service in where it is most helpful to be of service, which could be anywhere from the first through the seventh subworlds, because they are they go and do what they need to do as needed. They basically help the whole worlds, the whole subworlds, to function better. They will help individuals, but they sometimes help, we'll call it the quasi-governments of the astral world, to work better. Groups of people, anyway. Sometimes more like cities and towns. But they try to help people, oftentimes in larger than individuals, groups, to do things. But sometimes they do help the individuals as well. Depends on who is doing what and when and where. The people who are able to consistently serve in the first astral subworld live the most meaningful life. They have very little lacking in meaning, even from the first day they exist there. Whereas people, as was obvious in the second subworld, can lose decades of meaning until they resolve some of their issues. So the meaning issue still is there. But for people in the first subworld, it's virtually non-issue for them. And that's the difference. There's a big difference between that and any of the lower subworlds. Let's move on to the mental worlds now and talk about some of the concepts that make these worlds so different. First of all, when you get to the mental world, you've lost your astral body. It's died. You don't have astral senses any longer. It is true, and I know I've taught this, you know, people say, well, what about the exception? Well, the exception is that some astral sense may have fused with your mental sense, just as some physical sense could have. And you could have a small amount of those senses fused in light, because that part never leaves. That's a good thing. From one lifetime to the next, one incarnation to the next, you can keep that. But that amount is small and not the significant element for at least a show like tonight. The important thing to consider here is once you get to the mental world, you're living in a world of monastic thinking, not creative imagination. What you think in terms of mental thought is what creates the world that you exist in. Now, this is tricky because some people don't think that well, so their ability to create the world is almost non-existent, and they live mostly in their past creations from their prior life in the astral and physical worlds, and correcting the things that they were selfish in during that time, and they go backwards in time. You can't change the past in the past. You can change the past as it will be from the future time that you're working from. So someone that goes back when they were 5 years old, 10 years old in the past, or their past, and they change the way they were mentally thinking, that changes for the time from that point forward, that point being in the time in which they are in the mental world, not the time when they were in the physical world, from that point forward, it changes reality for them and for anybody else who is thinking along the same kinds of selfish thinking from that point forward, that point being the point at which they went into the mental Akasha to make the change, not going back in past in time. That they can't change. They can only change in time from the point where they make the change from that point forward. And so the interesting thing about this is that it does affect a lot of people to do this, but only from the time at which it is done in the time that the person is in the mental world. And most people get confused about that. It's a hard thing to understand. They are creating their own reality as it is in the mental world, whether they are in their own Akasha, which is the past of their experiences, or they're interacting with other people. In order to interact with other people, they have to have amazing clarity in their mental thinking because they are co-creating the world in real time that they exist in. And mental thought is so fast that as other people are creating it, if you're going to participate in that, you've got to be pretty clear in your thinking. And that means you can't have very much egotism, and you can't have, which is mental illusion, you can't have any arrogance. And you've got to be very humble. This encourages people to live as a soul, because that's how souls live. They live in the higher mental world. This all happens in the lower mental world, where examples of concepts in the higher mental world exist. And so people are in real time. In real time, they're learning how to co-create with other people a whole world that oftentimes deals with possible futures for how their incarnations, future incarnations of their souls, are going to interrelate. They live in the future of the world, but these are virtual futures. They don't necessarily aren't all going to exist the way they create them. And they may make hundreds, thousands of new virtual worlds. Some of them will be close to the way things will happen, and others will not be anything near that because they are experimenting with the outcomes. Some of the outcomes don't work because the parts that they create in their mental structure shows them that that particular version of incarnation of one or more of them will not work together. This gives the soul plenty of information to be able to choose what kinds of incarnations to make together. They make them in groups, hundreds, even thousands, and they figure out what is going to work best for the near future. Wow. That's the benefit. That's the kind of work that people are doing in the mental world. It's very creative. Now, you start off in the seventh subworld, and there you're mostly making changes in the forms of things. And it sounds like, well, that doesn't sound like very interesting, but it is. I mean, there's a lot of changes in forms that has a big change on the way people live. And the reality that they experience, and the kinds of incarnates that will deal best with that kind of problem. Eventually, you end up in the sixth subworld. And unlike the astral world, you don't just live out your life in mostly one subworld. You try to make it through all four of the lower subworlds. And so you go to the sixth, and in the sixth, you're trying to live a life in which you can go through the same experience, same life experiences, but instead of the focus being on form, it's based upon how people are going to interrelate in terms of their astral expressions, their feelings, their expressions of feelings. And things really change now, because the form of feelings is different than the form of forms. And you end up with different results and a different possible incarnate or some changes made in that incarnate. All this vast amount of information is being shared by the souls. Amazing stuff. Okay, then eventually you go to the fifth subworld where you try to work with the form of mental thinking. How are people going to relate to each other as mental beings? How well do they create truth? That's an amazing thing. Even in of itself, the idea that you can alter future realities based upon how people interrelate and whether or not they are going to create more truth or less truth by being together. One incarnate with another might produce more or less truth, depending upon what kind of tweaks you make in each one of them. And the object of producing truth is very important because it's the measure of also how much you're going to drive out, like on a planet that's not sacred, like Earth, evil. Truth is one of the defenses, one of the offenses to evil. Okay, so that's another part of the equation. And life in that part of the mental realm is, again, a very unique and interesting experience. In order to get there, in each one of these parts of the mental world, this is the lower mental world now, you've got to first clear your own mental body of egotism and, of course, arrogance. And you have to become more humble. That's why you spend time in your past seeing all the ways that you were mentally selfish and fixing it. As you fix it, from that point forward, you become changed, and so does anybody else that has any interaction with you. Amazing how you're changing reality by changing thought. And finally, you get to the fourth subworld, where you're supposed to be able to do this with all three together at the same time. This is, right now, it's still pretty illusion and difficult to do, but there's work to be done there. And few people succeed. Too many fail in their ability to bring it all together. So their souls suffer because they don't have an accurate viewpoint of balancing these three parts of the mental thought of the next incarnates. And so when the souls work together, they don't have fully developed information, at least on Earth, and you don't have perfect incarnates for what would be a better outcome. There's a lot of holes, a lot of things that are mistakes. And part of this comes from the fact that the incarnates themselves we ourselves, are not working together effectively, especially in the fourth subworld. And sometimes we're not creating enough truth in the fifth, and we're not creating enough love in the sixth or form aspect. And the seventh, the form aspects, remember, create a synthesis and an organization to ideas. They also lead to an economical society where form is not wasted. So all of this is important in terms of bringing together for each soul the best possible incarnate. But the best possible incarnate is not a single incarnate. It's one that's going to relate to hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of other incarnates in that lifetime. And all of these, the soul is attempting to bring together so that each lifetime will be more meaningful and closer to the soul itself in the way it could be if it could live without being illusioned itself in the lower worlds. The lower worlds are constructed, all worlds are constructed by each being. We are creating the reality that we exist in. That reality is very far from being perfect right now. And as we correct it in the life going through the astral and lower mental worlds, we are changing what was a less than desirable outcome while we were physically alive. We're improving it. We're making it better. And so the grace of this whole situation is you don't just get one shot or two shots. You're getting a whole bunch of chances to make things better in these realms. You're getting the opportunity to virtually redo your life. Now, some people will complain from what I just said. Well, but you said you don't get to keep your senses. You don't get to live in the physical world a second time. Well, that's true. But you get to relive it through a new magnifying glass, where you get to see things much more clearly for the astral side or the monastic or mental side that you couldn't have done while you're physically alive, because we're not able to do that yet. We're not super beings yet. We're just human beings, which means we separate cells and cause all kinds of issues and problems. This does not cause a great deficiency. It leads to a tremendous improvement. And it's not punishment. And there is no place you're punished. People punish themselves. Yes, they do terrible things to themselves. But there's no external source that's going to do something terrible to you. It's you doing it to yourself. And all the way through, there is the opportunity for great improvement. All the way through, there's the opportunity for increased meaning. In the mental world, the meaning is so vast in comparison to the astral that it's hard to fathom, because in the astral world, you could only make minuscule changes in a relative period of time. Let me give you an example. In the astral world, it might take a week to slightly modify a particular desire. Whereas in the mental world, any one of the four lower subworlds, you could change an egotistical way of thinking, which is blocking your accuracy in thought, and become humble in a few seconds. The realization of meaning comes almost immediately as soon as you make that change in the mental world, and then carry it through by focusing out that same energies, the same energies that were mentally being diffused into wrongful sense, you focus it out into serving other people. And you do that by helping them to, you communicate, and you help them to better understand your thinking. And they understand their own thinking better. So it's sort of like everybody is helping everybody to think better at the same time that they are creating, through their thought, these new realities. But the instantaneousness, or seeming instantaneousness, it isn't exactly instant, but it's very close, in relative terms, compared to the astral world, is huge. Therefore, the meaning developed is equally represented by the savings in time. And that meaning is what really makes us live, what gives us, what makes life have any kind of value. And that's why the mental part of this whole, we'll say, grand experience is so much closer to the life of the soul that is living its life in a vastly great meaning, because it sees itself in doing these great things, and it is doing them, with others like itself, while we are stuck in the mud, so to speak, and seeing virtually nothing until we get to the mental world of what we're really doing on an average. Now, you don't have to have that. You could live your life. We all could be living our lives like we're in the mental world while we're in the physical world. It takes great spiritual discipline to do this, but you can achieve it. It's actually possible to live your life as though you're close to being a superhuman. But it requires huge amounts of spiritual discipline and a lot of sacrifices. And it requires that your life be devoted to spiritual service and accurately doing so. If you do all that, the results can be phenomenal. And that's part of the gift. And at any time from this moment on, everybody listening to me has that opportunity to do exactly what I'm saying. And even if you weren't listening to me, if you go into the astral world and you're living there, you still have the same opportunities. Some of the service side goes away because as you lose the lower bodies, the amount of total service that could be done is reduced. Even though you have the same good intentions, etc., with less ability to co-create with God because there's less dimension left, there's less outcome. The greatest outcome is that can be done is right here in the physical world, where service is the most difficult to do, and God is the furthest from being realized. People who spiritually serve here have incredibly meaningful lives while they're doing amazing amounts of spiritual work. This is the place to really do it. And that's the reason I encourage everybody to do so and not wait for astral or mental life. There's no question you're going to get there anyway, but why not do it here? Well, because it is difficult and it's challenging, I know. But there's tremendous meaning to be garnered from doing it here. And until we are able to do it here, we certainly aren't going to stop going through this incarnation system. We're going to be continuing to incarnate until we have completed the ability to serve while physically alive at very high levels. I know everybody thinks there's some shortcut or special thing, or maybe you can pay some money and get some kind of certificate or something. I don't know. But there isn't. And once you get it, and once you really, really get it, then you'll do it yourself. And you won't need me encouraging, but probably to get between where you are and getting it, the encouragement may be of some help. And, of course, the shows I do like this and things I write about and whatever else I can be of assistance with are part of the process. I'm more than willing to be of much service as I can to those who are open to it. I think the point I'm trying to get at here is that living in the astral and mental worlds is a continuation. It's not a separate life. It's a continuation of a life that begins here. And now is the time to do the most you can while you're here, because you're not going to have the same opportunities in the future, although you'll find that it'll be much easier. But ease is not the measure of meaning, and in many ways, it's the opposite. So keep that in mind when considering tonight's show and what I spoke about. I hope that this has made some sense, and I tried to do this more on a conceptual basis so that people got more of what it was, why things are the way they are. That's kind of what I did. Now, if I shorted you on the mental worlds, I'm sorry about that. I did go through that very quickly. You can read more about it, and it'll make more sense if you do that. The mental worlds are very complicated, and I simplified them quite a bit. But they help to gel the actual going back to and becoming your soul. We create ourselves back into being our souls. That's the answer to the whole thing. People say, well, how do I get to back to be my soul? Well, you're going to create that. Even though you don't think you can do it yet, you will be able to do it eventually as you live through the experiences that I spoke of tonight. I hope that this has made sense. I hope that this does make a somewhat completed picture of what this system of living beyond just the physical world is about. And maybe it makes some sense of why we even live in the physical world. But the physical world is far from the end. It is also the most important in terms of our service. I hope, again, this has been of some service to everybody who's listened. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.